This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
When the nights get cold and the lights go out, the sun is gone behind the clouds, and you feel lost, and I'll reach out to guide you home with my lighthouse. Oh, whoa, oh, whoa, I'll guide you home with my lighthouse.
This show has one mission: to give hope where hope is lost or fading fast. We're here for anyone that is affected by mental illness, their friends, their family, their employers, teachers, and anyone else in the community. Welcome to Lighthouse of Hope. I'm your host, Michael Hempseed. I'm so glad you're joining us today. On today's show, we have a special guest, Eleanor. She's going to talk to us about a couple of things. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's really good to be here.
Fantastic. So first of all, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, please?
Well, I'm currently studying at the University of Canterbury doing a Master's of Writing, and I'm going to complete that midway for next year. So that's pretty cool. And just in my spare time, I do a lot of youth engagement through like the voluntary sector, through like Red Cross, and also stuff at uni as well. But I also got the opportunity to be part of the management team for Youth Voice Canterbury near the end of last year, so that's been a good journey for me so far.
Right, Youth Voice Canterbury. So why do the young people of Canterbury need a voice? Do they have laryngitis or something?
Well, I guess often when you're a young person, I mean, even sometimes when you're, you know, an adult, but you're still in sort of like the younger category, like 18 to 25, you often find yourself in situations where people speak for you or your opinions and ideas aren't really counted that much. So Youth Voice Canterbury aims to empower young people to have a say in the decisions that impact their life. So it was set up just about after the earthquakes, more to look at young people having a say in especially earthquake-related issues. But since then, it's expanded, just been more general for youth in Canterbury and giving young people opportunities and ways to connect and collaborate together.
Fantastic. And can you tell us what sort of decisions did they make about the earthquakes when Youth Voice first started?
I know they were just trying a lot of petitions and different engagement with young people just to try and get the youth in the area just engaged and being able to have their voices shown to government and local officials.
So Youth Voice has been going for a while now. What are some of the changes that you've seen in the young people that have been given a voice?
Well, I think especially since we've been a lot more broader since then, I guess we're trying to widen our horizons to be, especially look at more diverse youth and differences like those with disabilities, LGBTQ youth, and those who may not normally have a voice outside of just because of them being a young person.
And what specifically is your role with Youth Voice Canterbury?
Well, I'm part of the management team. There's six of us currently on the team. And we basically just have meetings, decide what our goals and projects are going to be. And we generally each get a different project to manage over the year or have a long the project goes on for. Like, for example, I'm currently managing the Big Ideas Fund, which we got $10,000 from the Youth Action Plan through the Christchurch City Council to be able to support the ideas of young people in Christchurch. So we did a group on that, and we did some voting on what ideas we wanted to go through with the young people who applied. And so we've funded different ideas, like some young people wanted to make a website to promote youth engagement in Christchurch. There was other people who were looking at road safety and biking, and just a lot of cool different initiatives that youth were really passionate about and wanted to give them the tools and the opportunity to be able to do them themselves rather than having to go through older people or not be able to have that much of a say in what they wanted to do.
And what sort of ages does Youth Voice Canterbury work with? What do you define as a youth?
Well, in our organisation, we currently define youth as between 12 to 24, so we are pretty broad. But I generally find that there's a lot more engagement among middle school age, high school age young people.
Right. And how do people get in touch with you? How do people get involved?
Well, we have a Facebook page, which has a lot of our details on it. And we also have a website as well, which is pretty just if you just Google and Youth Voice Canterbury, it will come up. And most of it will be on there. And also there'll be the contact links for the different management team members, depending on how you want to get in touch with them and who's organising what project, etc.
You also said that you did some work for the Red Cross. Can you tell me more about that, please?
Well, I'm part of Bounce, which is a youth wellbeing project that is run by Red Cross. It was set up after the earthquakes to look at how young Cantabrians could take care of their mental wellbeing and health in light of the earthquakes, and we've kept going since then, so that's been pretty cool.
And what sort of things they say that you can do to stay well and stay healthy?
So at Bounce, we have 5 tips for wellbeing, which we kind of use in the ethos of what we do. And so one of those is treat your body well, which is basically like taking care of your like physical health. So, you know, exercise and eating healthy. But it's also just looking at the achievable ways of doing it, not just like dieting or going on like big regimes, just like how to be sustainable and healthy, but also be able to eat and do what you love at the same time. And then one that is my favourite, the second one, is make a difference, which is often a lot of how do you engage with the community? What do you do that can benefit other people's lives, which I think is so important, because although giving back to the community can help other people, it's also a good thing for you, because it can be very good for your emotional health and well-being to be able to know that you're giving back and supporting others. Another one we have is keep doing what you love. This is just about being aware that you need to have time for yourself and to do the things that really matter to you. Like maybe you're really into sports, so you want to be part of a sports team, or acting or creative writing or whatever it is that you're into, to keep doing those good healthy things that you love and keeping time for those even on, you know, the busy days when there's stuff like university or work or high school or whatever it is that you have going on. Then we also have connect with others, which is probably for me one of the most important ones, just being aware that you have to be able to talk to people, keep involved, that even when, you know, you have a lot of deadlines coming up, you do make those effort to reach out and be able to connect with others, because that's so important for your well-being. And the final tip we have is know yourself. That's just knowing about your own journey and your own path, your own values, maybe your spiritual journey, like not necessarily religious, though it can be religious, just how you connect in the world and what you feel and how you're in tune.
Sounds fantastic. And there's a website there that people can check out as well, isn't there?
Yes.
I think bounce.org.nz?
Yep.
Okay, if you go to some random website with music on it and sound, you know you've gone to the wrong website. So we asked you to be on the show because you've got quite an interesting story to tell us. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened to you a couple of weeks ago, please?
Well, I was feeling really awful and really rotten. And I felt a bit awkward about it because I didn't really want to tell anyone. And also part of the time I was up in Wellington at a conference. So I with a team of people from Youth Voice Canterbury, actually, and I didn't really want to stress anyone out. So I felt so bad about it afterwards. So I kind of shared a bit about it on social media, which is the fact that I actually have depression sort of linked with my periods. I have a disorder called premenstrual dysphoric disorder, which is actually it's a mental health issue where when you, a few days before your period and a few days into it, you sort of get real, like you have lots of symptoms of depression, also physical symptoms like fatigue and those kind of different things. And it's just something that I've struggled with for quite a long time, but it's quite an awkward experience to talk about. So I just wanted to sort of put it out there and be like, this is my life. Like, and I think just in a way for the other people, if they were going through something similar, could know they weren't alone, I guess.
So really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing this, because it can be quite an embarrassing topic. I think, first of all, a lot of people would say, well, hold on, this is normal. Don't all women get PMS?
Well, I think to some extent, you know, a period isn't generally a joyful experience for a woman. You do experience some discomfort, and it can be a bit rough at times. But if you're constantly feeling distressed or suicidal or angry, or even if you have lots of, you know, really intense physical issues like pain and those sort of things, it's so important to get it checked out, because often maybe it could be PMDD like I have, or it could be endometriosis or another physical health issue. And I think a lot of the time, you know, pain and feeling awful is just like normalized for a woman's period, but it's actually not normal. Like, if you have a bit of discomfort, that's fine. But if it's interfering with your day-to-day life, then it's really a sign that you need to seek help.
Yeah, so I guess normal PMS could include, you know, feeling moody, maybe feeling angry. When it's PMSDD, that's really when people have suicidal thoughts, and it's an extreme version of that.
Yeah, I guess it's... I wouldn't say PMS on steroids, maybe that's a bit basic, but
yeah.
It's just, I guess, a lot more extreme version. It's often linked to hormones and how the hormones drop and dip during the menstrual cycle. Some people can react quite differently to that. Like, there's a lot of ideas around it. Like, some people say it's a mental health issue, other people say it's like a hormonal issue. They're not really quite sure at this stage, but it's cool that research is going on into the area to figure out how best to look at PMDD and how to treat it.
And when you first found out about this, what was your reaction to that?
I was quite relieved, I guess, because I was like, oh, this is a real thing that I've been struggling with. But I felt real awkward about it because, like you mentioned before, I was like, oh, this is just like normal. I'm just being overdramatic or whatever. And I talked to my GP about it and she was like real calm and we were like, yeah. And I think the fact that she was so casual about it, like it wasn't like I wasn't the first person who turned up to her with this issue, was actually really helpful.
Do you know roughly how many women would experience this?
I can't quite remember from my head, but I think it's about 5 to 10% of women.
Yeah, so it's a lot more common than people might think.
Definitely, and I think a lot of people, even who struggle with it, may not necessarily have a label for it as well, but a doctor may give them, you know, advice or treatment that are along the same lines, just without giving a name.
Yeah. And so you opened up about this a couple of weeks ago on Facebook. What kind of reactions did you get from people?
I got mainly really positive, like people going, there was a lot of people who were saying, oh, it's so interesting to hear about it. And a lot of, you know, me too, is like, you know, I've had similar experiences and, you know, should I seek help? Which I would definitely say yes to if you're feeling anything like that. So it was really good just to see the positive engagement because it is real awkward. I mean, there was... you know, a couple instances of people being like, oh, like, isn't that just how it is normally and, like, what's going on and maybe that's just a bit weird. But I also think those conversations can be equally as important as the positive ones, just because we need to be able to educate people and inform people on what, you know, is normal and what isn't normal, because often they're the people who often need the support the most.
Yeah. So how do you think you could approach someone if they're maybe a bit sceptical about this and maybe not sure whether it's a real issue?
Well, I think education is definitely key. Like, I think often sitting down and having, you know, just a heart conversation about it, even sending resources or getting them to talk to, if it's something affecting their life or someone they love, to get them to talk to a doctor about it. Like, I definitely advise going to see a GP, especially as when you can tell them the symptoms, they can have a better idea of maybe what you are struggling with, so they can refer you on to the right people.
Yeah, I think it's important to know that this has been recognised by the American Psychological Association, and also the it's now included in the ICD, the International Classification for Diseases. So, you know, this is taken very seriously by medical professionals because it can have such a big impact on people. And if you had one bit of advice for someone going through this, what would be that advice that you'd have?
I think I'd just say to keep persisting. I think when it comes to, you know, female health issues in general, there can be a lot more stigma and it can be a lot more skeptical, I guess, about this kind of thing, and you do have to fight a lot more. So if you're going to see a doctor or a specialist, the one thing I probably would really advise, which I've been told by a lot of people, is to bring a supportive friend or relative or someone who really has your back, because it's so important to get the support you need, but often it can take a few attempts to actually be able to engage with the right people. Like, I have one friend, Jasmine Irving, who runs a blog called Living Life Yellow. She's actually getting an award at the Canterbury Youth Awards this year, which is cool, for her work with endometriosis, which is obviously a physical health issue, but it can come with a lot of, you know, mental health side effects. And she's done some great awareness around that kind of thing. And I'd really love to see that same awareness around PMDD and other types of issues to do with the female reproductive system.
Yeah. And I think it often comes down to the fact that we don't understand what the difference between normal human behaviour is and a mental illness or a sign that something's not right. Because lots of people get down, lots of people have bad days. That's normal. That's called, well, there's a very serious name for that, very serious medical condition called life. But when people experience suicidal thoughts, when they're so depressed or so upset or in so much pain they can't get out of bed, they can't go to school or work, that's where they're saying that this is not just normal behaviour, that this has turned into either a mental illness or a health condition that needs some further advice. So how did you go about finding help for this? Was your regular doctor the best person, or did you Google this? Or?
Well, I wasn't really sure what to do, to be honest, because I felt a bit awkward about it, because to me, I guess it was my normal, so I didn't really, until I kind of opened up to a couple friends and was like, this is, you know, my thing. They were kind of like, oh, this isn't, you know, normal, this shouldn't be happening. And I was like, oh, just because I think often when you don't really talk about these things, you often think what's happening to you is just what happens to everybody else. And so I eventually did talk to my GP, who was quite helpful about it, and I'm currently on the wait list to see a specialist. But no, I personally had quite a good experience in the health sector so far, but I know that a lot of people don't, and it does take quite a while to find the right person and to get people to take you seriously. So I definitely say, if you know the first person you meet doesn't really take it seriously, do see another person.
Yeah, and that's what person after person on the show has told me, that if they had one bit of advice for anyone going through a mental illness, it would be that if for any reason you're seeing a counsellor or a doctor and they're not understanding, they don't seem to listen or anything like that, that you can change.
Yes, I 100% agree. Like, often you feel like, oh, I'm sort of stuck with this person, that you don't have much choices. But honestly, there's so much support out there and so many different people that you can do, that if someone isn't working out for you, it is so possible and very helpful to go and find someone new.
And you said that there are specialists that can manage this. So is this a specialist area that some doctors would have?
Well, I'm not too sure. Like, I know I've been just sent to, like, the general sort of gynecology area, who look into these sort of different areas. But I'm not too sure. Like, I'm hoping there will be someone with enough knowledge there, but I'm just going to see how it goes and then ask if I need more help.
Yeah. What you said before about that this was normal for you, that I expect you to have had this for several years beforehand?
Well, I think for me, like, I was sort of, you know, I had a lot of issues with my period anyway. You know, I'd have 2-week periods, which, for if anyone knows, that's not normal. You're generally between about 3 to 7 days. But I just kind of was my normal, and, you know, I was, like, exhausted and suicidal, and I was just like, oh, this is just kind of what happens. Like, I didn't really think of it. And I think the problem often is you're, when you're in the moment and you're feeling that bad, you know it's an issue, but then it stops because, you know, your period stops, and then you sort of convince yourself, oh, it wasn't that bad, and then the next month something, you're like, oh, actually it really was that bad. And I think it's just that cycle of being like, oh, it wasn't that bad, and then you have the whole other month to convince yourself that you were just overreacting the whole time.
Yeah. And I think in the past we've had the attitude of mental illness that if you're feeling suicidal, if you're in a bad place, you should talk to someone. But we need to actually change that, because sometimes people that are either experiencing mental illness or suicidal, they don't actually recognise it in themselves because they've grown up with it, or to them it's normal.
Yeah, I definitely say that's a problem. Like the friend I was mentioning earlier, Jasmine, I think she was real, tried to hone it into me, you know, these things aren't normal, like, that's not how you're supposed to feel. Whereas I was like, like, yeah, I get what you're saying, but actually this kind of is normal. Like, I don't think it's that bad. And I think you do need those people in your lives. And if someone does have the knowledge and awareness to be able to tell you, hey, actually, I think something's going on and you need to, you know, get more help and look into it deeper.
Yeah. And what would you say to someone that, as they're listening to this, they know their periods are bad and they think, oh, maybe they're worse than other people's, but I'm not really sure if this is me. Would you have any advice for them?
I definitely say reach out, talk to a GP. I know there's a lot of people out there with a lot of different opinions and a lot of different specialties, but I definitely say a first port of call should be a GP, because they'll know the best people to refer you on to if you need to, just to be able to talk about it, be able to figure out what's going on. And as I said again, definitely bring someone with you if you need the support. But, you know, even just doing some online research yourself, like, I'm not a big one for self-diagnosis, but even just getting some, you know, information and awareness and just being, you know, is this similar? And I think even sometimes just talking to your mates, you know, if you just talk to a handful of, you know, women, there's going to be one or two who's probably experiencing something quite similar and who'll tell you, actually, you know, this isn't such a great experience.
Yeah, and I often tell people that if they're on the fence and they're not sure whether they need to seek help, that's probably a good reason to seek help. Like if you're on the fence and sort of umming and ahhing about it, that's possibly an indicator that actually this is something you should get checked out.
If you are, you know, considering maybe it's an issue, then it probably is an issue, or at least something you should be looking a bit further into before making that call.
And it's far better to go to a GP and they say, actually, no, this is normal, than to experience this for years and years.
Definitely. Like, you know, sometimes people feel a bit awkward. They're like, oh, they're just going to tell me nothing's wrong, and it would, like, feel awkward. But honestly, someone telling you nothing's wrong, I mean, that's the best case scenario. But you still need to be able to check it out before you get to that stage. Or if someone wants to go, actually, maybe you need to look into this a bit deeper, I can refer you on to this person or this organisation.
Fantastic. Well, we're out of time now, but Eleanor, thank you very much for being on the show. Really appreciate you having the courage to talk about this, what can be sometimes an embarrassing and difficult issue.
Thanks. It's so good to be on here, and I've loved being able to spread awareness a bit more, because I know it's not talked about enough, and I think that was why I really wanted to come on here and talk about it.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. Take care.
When the nights get cold and the lights go out, the sun is gone behind the clouds, and you feel lost, and I'll reach out to guide you home with